I'd like to begin the sermon today by referring to a song. And the song is, the most famous word in the song is R-E-S-P-E-C-T, find out what it means to me. So probably most of you know who sang that song. And the most famous rendition was of that song was done by Aretha Franklin. But interestingly, that song was written not by Aretha, it was written by a man by the name of Otis Redding. It was written by Otis Redding. And I heard Aretha Franklin sing it. I had no idea Otis Redding sang it. I know he did Sitting by the Dock of the Bay, but that's what I knew him for until later on in my musical understanding. But anyway, Otis Redding wrote that song, Respect. And Aretha sang it. And it's interesting, as you think about the fact that it was written by a man, was it reflective of a man's perspective? Something that is important to a man. I can almost guarantee you that respect was not the chief issue that's important to Aretha Franklin. And you may say, well, why are you saying that? I hope you'll understand better as we go through the sermon. So today I'd like to address the ladies in the congregation in regard to marriage, and we will address the men next time I speak. So the message will touch on the role of the wife in a marriage relationship, and it's really a message about how a woman can better understand her husband or a man. And with this understanding, a woman can help her marriage to be the best that it can be. And if this key factor is understood and implemented in your marriage, you will see the fruits of it in the relationship that you have with your spouse. As you look at the subject of marriage, there are literally thousands of books that have been written about marriage. I probably have somewhere between 50 and 100 of them on my bookshelves at home. And the book that I used in reference to the sermon is a book entitled Love and Respect by Emerson Eggerichs. And this book has some helpful insights in the area of marriage. However, if you think about what books are best to contribute to the marriage, there's only one book that really does the whole job, and that's the book we know as the Bible. The Bible is not a marriage manual, but it has principles in it that if we follow, they're going to help you have the best marriage that you possibly can. And this book that I read helps to draw out some of those principles, and hopefully you'll benefit from what we find in the Bible and in this book. As we well know, God created men and women differently. They are not the same. Men and women are different in regard to their physical, mental, and emotional makeup. And because men and women are so different, it makes sense that men and women would have different needs, they would look at things differently, and they would react to situations and circumstances differently. For instance, the author of this book talks about each of us as males, we look at the world in a certain way, and females look at it in a certain way. And each of us decodes what's going on with our spouse in a particular way. And the author of the book, he said it's decoded this way. Women have pink sunglasses and pink hearing aids. So they see things through those sunglasses and hear things through those hearing aids. And men have blue sunglasses and blue hearing aids. And we interpret things through those devices. We see through that screen of blue, and we hear through that filter of blue. And as a result of hearing and seeing in that way, then that causes problems. That's why we have problems. Additionally, as you look at people's marriages, not all marriages are the same. For instance, when it comes to birthdays, there are some couples that say, we're going to celebrate it on the exact day when the birthday occurs. Others say, well, we can't do it because of this, that, or the other thing, so we'll do it at a later date. or we'll do it earlier. We can move things around and it's still okay. Anniversaries, some say it has to be on the day. It can't be before or after. It has to be on that day. Others are more flexible and they can vary the day that they might do it. Some people give birthday presents. Others give anniversary presents. Others don't. Also, you know, another area that you might look at that we, many of us differ on is how the area of household chores. Some divide up the chores. Some don't divide them up. But what you find is marriages differ in certain ways, and you have to allow people the freedom to do that. What works for them works for them. And you also have to take into consideration, okay, the way we work this out, how's it going to impact the children? Because they're all observing as well. So that's just something we have to realize, is that our marriages aren't all exactly the same. But the values and approach that we bring to the marriage are most important. So a question for all of you as wives and ladies: what is it that a man needs and desires? What is it that a man needs and desires? And if they receive it, then your marriage relationship will work at optimum level. So what is it? It's not sex. Okay? So it's not sex. So what is it that must be present in a marriage relationship that the man desperately needs because God created them that way? What is it that he needs? As you look at the scriptures, they tell us that there are actually two key factors that must be present in a marriage for that marriage to be happy. Two key factors that are found in the scriptures. They are actually found in Ephesians chapter 5. They're spelled out for us in Ephesians chapter 5. And these two factors are very important. They're part of our marriage ceremony. And as you go through marriage counseling with the couple that wants to be married, you go through these scriptures, and you ask the couple about them in order to gauge their understanding. You talk to them about how they see what their reaction to the verses are, and you also see how they will implement the principles, these principles in their marriage. Because each of the partners in the relationship have their part to play in the success of the marriage. The reason for that is because the instruction in the scriptures about marriage is truly the greatest foundation to a couple's lasting and successful marriage. So let's go to Ephesians 5 and let's look at that. Ephesians chapter 5. So the Apostle Paul was inspired to write in Ephesians 5 about the subject of marriage. And beginning in verse 22, we'll just read through 22 through 33, and then we'll do some focusing on some things. First of all, in verse 22, it says, "Wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as also Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, just as the church is subject to Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her, that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of the water by the word, that he might present her to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. So husbands ought to love their wives, their own wives, as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones." And it talks about a man leaving his home and setting up his own household, and the two shall become one flesh. Verse 32, "This is a great mystery." So there's something bigger here, something spiritual that can be garnered from this as well. "But I speak concerning Christ and the church." And then he says, "Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband." So in this sermon, I want to focus on the two key factors found in verse 33. Love is something that a man should give to his wife. As he should love his wife as himself. And respect, let the wife respect, see that she respects her husband. When I look at Paul's instructions, I don't think most married couples fully understand these two principles. I know that I don't believe that I have, and I would include myself in those that are still learning. I think most of us as men are still trying to learn what it means to really love one's wife. I know, as I said, I am. So I don't hold myself up as the perfect example on every front. Since the respect is directed to the ladies, I'd like to focus on that element today. So let's think about the subject of respect and men. So what does respect mean in the context of marriage? What does respect mean in the context of marriage? When you look at your husband through the glasses of respect, what do you see? So you look at him and you think about respect. Do you see clearly, or is your vision somewhat blurry? Not quite clear enough to see what respect really should look like. Maybe society has had an impact on you or on your understanding of respect. And our society is a very powerful force, and for more than a generation, it has been seeking to influence our understanding of the marriage relationship and what approach that we should have. And are there problems in marriages? We see that all too often, sadly. So, and as you think about the words submit and respect, sometimes those are difficult words for ladies living in this age because it's easy to absorb society's point of view on that subject. If you're uncomfortable with those words, you might ask, well, why is that? Is it justifiable? For instance, just to show the problem, a minister was conducting a wedding, and he got to the, and this was, these people weren't in the church, but when he got to the portion of the marriage where the word submit was mentioned, he got a boo from the audience. So these people weren't in the church, and that was not a popular term with those people. And the boo does reflect the attitude that our society has that to that particular word and its meaning. And I would say they don't fully grasp the significance of it. And that's a sad thing. It is my hope that as we go through this sermon, that all of us will soften to what God wants all of us to do. Men, do we love our wives? Is it something we need to improve in? I do. What about you? Ladies, do you respect your husband? Is it something that you need to grow in as well and come to better understand? So as you look at those subjects about loving your wife and about being submissive and being respectful, we're not interpreting those things based upon society. We don't care what they have to say about it from a societal point of view. What matters is, what did God inspire and put into the scriptures? We want to understand that and then seek to live by it. Seek to implement it in our marital relationships. And as I said, men and women are different creatures in many ways. And I'd like to illustrate that with a story. A woman went out, and this couple had been having marital difficulties. So what they did is they came to a marriage counselor. So he was giving them the opportunity to speak their piece and explain what was going on in their marriage. So the woman had the floor first. He gave her the floor. So she mentioned, let me give you an example of what's going on in our marriage. So she said, she went to the woman in the marriage went to the grocery store. She came back from the grocery store and was bringing the groceries in. And when she brought the groceries in, her husband is in watching a football game. So as she comes in, her husband says, hey, honey, when you put the groceries away, why don't you come and sit with me and watch the game with me? All right. So she put the groceries. So she thinks, great. She puts the groceries away and goes in and sits down next to him. So she sits down next to him and she's sitting there and she's waiting and he doesn't say a word. So She jumps up. She's angry. And she says to him, he continues to watch the game. And after a few, so she gets up and say, and she says that you had no intention of spending time with me or talking to me. Why invite me in here to sit with you and watch this dumb game? So the counselor says to the man, what's your side of this? And he says, I didn't mean for her to talk. I just wanted her to come in, hang out, and be next to me, and we'd watch the game together. So the next thing I know, she's angry, and we're in a big argument. So the scenario described between this couple happened over and over again, and their marriage, in fact, was deteriorating. And it's a sad commentary on the relationship there. The couple had been married for years. They loved each other, but they had difficulties. Now, you see, as the man invited her in to sit next to him, remember I talked about the blue sunglasses and blue hearing aid? He's perfectly clear. He's sending a blue message. But how is she hearing that? She's hearing it through pink glasses and pink hearing aids. He wants to hang, he wants to be with me and talk, and we'll cuddle and grow closer together. All right? Different interpretations because you're men and women. So the problem here is they didn't truly understand each other, even though they'd been together for years. And they didn't know each other as much as they thought they did. And so, ladies, do you understand your husband? Gentlemen, do you understand your wife? If you're not married and you're a lady, do you understand men? And if you're a young gentleman who is unmarried, do you understand the ladies? So ladies need to understand what a man's role is meant to be in a marriage relationship. What makes men tick? What makes men tick? And God knew that we needed to understand each other and fulfill each other's needs. And as you think about God's overall perspective in creating humanity and His purpose for humanity, He tells us in John chapter 10, verse 10, He created human beings and He's leading mankind so that they can enjoy life more abundantly. Not just in the world to come, but right here and now. Enjoy life in every aspect, all that you can. And that's what Christ came for, that they may have life and they may have it more abundantly. And that includes having a good marriage. So, ladies, what can you do to change or improve your relationship with your spouse? What can you do to change or improve your relationship with your spouse? What would be the first thing that as a lady would pop into your mind that you need to do? The natural female response would be, I need to show him more love. I need to show him more love. I need to do things that show him I truly love him. Is that the answer? That's, again, the female perspective. Should you love him? Yes. That's true. But there's more to it than that. Love is not the motivating factor for him. It's a different motivating factor. The book mentions that they took a survey of 100 men. And out of those 100 men, 85% of those men said that respect from their wives was more important than demonstrations of love. Respect, from a man's perspective, is more important than love. Now, from a female perspective, love's the answer. Like the Beatles said, love is all you need. But in a marriage, that's not necessarily the case. And there's a reason for that. Let's go back to Ephesians 5 and look at verse 22, where it says, wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. Now, this relates, the word there, submit, is different than respect, but the words respect and submit are connected. Why would a woman submit to her husband? Why would a modern woman submit to her husband? As I said, there's a reason for that. And we begin to understand that looking at verse 23. It says, "For the husband is the head of the wife, as also Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body." So with verses 22 and 23 in mind, I'd like you to think back to your baptism. Ladies, think back to your baptism. At your baptism, you entered into a covenant relationship with Jesus Christ, didn't you? And that demonstrated that you had surrendered your life to Him. You made a commitment at that time to follow Him wherever He would lead you. So to a degree, that same relationship that you have with Jesus Christ is the same one you are to have with your husbands. You made a covenant to follow Jesus Christ, and at marriage, you made a covenant to follow your husband, as you do Jesus Christ. So let's think about what submit means in actuality. It means to submit yourself to Him freely, not because you're forced to do it. Jesus Christ, just as Jesus Christ freely, not by compulsion, submitted His will to the Father and gave His life for mankind. Christ willingly submitted to the Father, willingly followed the Father, even to the point of death. That is the example. That is the standard. That's why Paul goes to that in verse 23, because he said, this is the model when we come to submission and respect. And think about this. It means to submit yourself freely. You're not forced to do it. And if you follow that admonition, there will be blessings that flow from it. And you have to realize that humanly, you may not want to follow that path, but you have to realize this is the God that wants you to have abundant life. And in your being submissive, you are acting in faith. You're acting in faith. You're saying, God told me to do this, so I want to try to understand it and do it, because blessings will flow therefrom. And you look at Christ. Christ was the ultimate example. You can go to chapter 2 and look at verses 5 through 8, and it talks about Christ submitting, becoming a bondservant, and being willing to lay down His life for all mankind, going to the point of death. And Christ died for all of us. He died for you and me. And as you think about His death for you and me and His willing to make that sacrifice, what's the correlation for you? What's the correlation that we can draw from this? The correlation is this. Your husband is to be willing to lay down his life and die for you. That's his role. That's his responsibility. He is to be willing to lay down his life for you, and if need be, to die for you. And your husband, he's willing to protect you. He's willing to step out front of you and the children to protect them. That's his role. That's his responsibility. And that's a natural thing for a man to do. That's the way that he's been made by God. And question is, do wives understand this? Do you respect and submit yourself to a man who is willing to die for you? That's the standard. That's the standard. You may say, well, you know, I'm not sure he would be willing to do any of that stuff for me. Does that give you an out? Does it tell you submit to him and respect him if he's perfect? It doesn't give you any qualifiers. It just says this is the approach that you as a wife are to take. So as you think about that, that doesn't fit with our present culture. But we're not worried about the culture. We're worried about what is pleasing to God. And our actions, as I said, are based on the Bible, not on man's interpretation, but what it says, and we can draw out from it by study and drawing it out in the right way, and not what the culture or society is telling us. And if you look at the culture and society, they're not buying into any of this at all. I was talking to somebody before church, and they were saying that 70% of college students today believe that your gender is not set at birth. It means you're kind of an open book and you can go whichever way you want. You're not a boy, you're not a girl, you're whatever you want to be. So as you think about that, that's not a good trend. And if 70% of college students are going to be the leaders of your society to come, that's kind of scary. So anyway, just things are not going well. And as you think about men in as far as how they're depicted in our society today in the media, are they depicted well? Are they depicted as leaders? Are they depicted as brave? Are they depicted as intelligent? That's not how they're depicted. Now you might ask, well, why would they depict them that way? Is it just to get a laugh? It's more than that. It's more than that. You have to realize Satan, the devil, hates God's people. And he knows that God is trying to build a family, and a human family is very much a part of that process. So if he destroys that, which he's doing quite well at, then he's ahead of the game in destroying and eradicating humanity. God's not going to allow that to happen, but you have to realize that negative portrayals of fathers and men isn't just happenstance. There's a purpose behind it. And we may laugh at it, but it's not a laughable situation. So ladies, do you think God created a need in your husband for you to submit to him? Is there a need for that? Well, think about this. Our culture destroys what boys and girls do naturally. There are numerous factors in our culture that have led to this. And what are we seeing? As I said, we're seeing a reversal of roles. We're seeing men becoming more effeminate and women becoming the leaders and providers for the family. And many times, why is that? Because men, more and more, all too often in this age, have abdicated their role. They've abdicated their role. One example is this. When in ancient times, when I was a teenager, and I was going to go out on a date, it was my job to ask the girl if she wanted to go. It was my job to say, hey, would you like to go to see this or do this? It was my job to work all that out. It wasn't her job. And believe it or not, no girls ever called me and asked for a date. But it could happen today, and the boys just sit back and let it happen. Whereas you're the male, you're the one who's to be the aggressor. That's how you've been created. And to be the aggressor in the right way. And that means to be respectful. You know, you don't pull up in front of her home and honk the horn, and she comes out. Like somebody told me, if you honk the horn, she's not coming. And you can just move on down the road. So you go to the door, you introduce yourself. You know, first of all, it was, if you remember back in that day, was it easy to ask the girls out on a date? You had to think about it. You kind of sweated. Is she going to turn me down? Man, an ego deflator. Well, you finally sucked it up. You've made the date. And then you have to go up to the door and introduce yourself to the dad, who always is happy to see you, and meet the mom and all of that. And you're going to have her back at what time? What time do you want her back? You know, so anyway, you realize that this is an important detail here. So to the men, as you look at the way men are behaving today, many times it's because of their lack of understanding of what it means to be a man. What are the expectations of a man? Are we teaching our young men to be men, to be leaders in that way? A man of goodwill, a godly man, is, you know, he, and when I say ladies, he has goodwill. He's not faking it. He genuinely loves you and wants the best for you. And if you trust him, he's not going to do you in. He's not going to treat you badly. He's a person of goodwill. Now, he may make mistakes, But that's a different story than intentionally doing hurtful things. So, if a man is a man of goodwill, a man who can be respected in his God-given position, there are times, you know, as you look at women, that they don't respect a man, and they're unwilling to be submissive. And it's because of the way that men have acted. Men have not fulfilled their responsibility. And if men don't fulfill their responsibility, then guess what? Women will. They will fill those roles. And I'm not saying that, you know, a lack of respect or submission is right. I'm just saying that I can understand why a woman would come to that particular position. But one thing that you have to realize, as men are lazy, women get crazy. As men are lazy, women get crazy. And I mean by that, you know, men, we can be married and we can have adjusted ourselves to the way things are to such extent we don't put much effort into it. So as long as everything's cool, we're okay. But just because there's no upheaval doesn't mean it's exactly the way it should be. So maybe we have to think about, okay, where are things at in my marriage? And I'm talking to myself. You know, I've been married 42 years, and is it we've been married 42 years just because we're gutting it out? Or is it better than that, that it's actually abundant? So my goal going forward is to do the best I can to make things more abundant, as God wanted it to be. So this is a message for the ladies today, but men, if you're not fulfilling your God-given role, you're not doing what a man should be doing, understanding what it loves means to love your wife, they will go crazy and they will take the lead if you won't do it. And so if you want a successful marriage, love your wife, and we'll get into that not this week. So what are the natural tendencies for a man? What are the natural tendencies for a man? What characteristics did God give him when he was created? Let's go back to Genesis chapter 1, verse 28. Because this God spelled it out right at the beginning. Genesis 1, verse 28. In verse 28 it says, "Then God blessed them, and God said to them, 'Be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish, over the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth.'" So what does that verse tell us? It tells us that God blessed them and said, "Be fruitful and multiply." He said, "Fill the earth and subdue. Have dominion over every living creature that moves on the earth." And when God said this, to whom was he saying it to? He was saying it to Adam. He was saying this to Adam. And God gave Adam the tools and ability to do that. And it's not an accident that men typically are bigger, stronger, faster than a woman. He had to be built to accomplish what God created him to do. So if you're to have dominion, you're to subdue, you're to do these kind of things, then you need to be bigger, stronger, faster. And that's all to be used in the right way in order to accomplish what God created you for. And ladies, as you look at your husband, does he have the need to and to feel and have a reason to protect and lead? Your husband has that need. Your husband has the need to feel and have a reason to protect and lead because that's the way God created him. What are boys told today? Everyone is equal. Everyone leads or no one leads, or we all lead. Everyone gets a trophy. And believe it or not, that's not natural. That's not how boys naturally play. Boys push, shove, bump, wrestle, race, and seek to outdo each other. And they want to go out and conquer the neighborhood. That's how they've been created. And I don't mean this in a bad way, but that's just, they've got that energy and that drive. And you can see it more in some boys than others. I remember these teenagers that were playing basketball, and it was a constant. I'm better than you. Look what I can do. You know, these were teenagers. I thought, these guys are like five. But that was how they were acting. And I can do this, and you can't do this, and I'm faster than you, and I'm better than you. And it was all this in-your-face kind of stuff, which wasn't right. And it was an extreme situation, but that's how males are created. You want to corral it, of course. Now, God gives us an inkling of how he created men back in Nehemiah. Nehemiah chapter 4. Nehemiah chapter 4. We have this, what we're going to read here in Nehemiah chapter 4. And this is in the context of the people of Judah returning from Babylon. They come back to the land, and one of their chief responsibilities is to rebuild the temple, to build the walls of the city and to rebuild the temple. The temple rebuilding being the paramount goal for them, the walls being a secondary issue. But they've been struggling. They've not been able to build the walls. They keep being attacked and harassed by the people and politically being undermined in that process. So Nehemiah returns, and he seeks to get things going in the right direction. And look at how he organizes things. Nehemiah chapter 4, verse 13. It says, "Therefore I positioned men behind the lower parts of the wall at the openings, and I set the people according to their families with their swords, their spears, and their bows." So, the men were working. Part of the time they were serving as guards, as lookouts, and part of the time they were building. But where were they guarding and building? They were building where their family lived. They were building where their family lived. So this was done according to their families because Nehemiah recognized that family is important. And it's natural for men to want to protect and watch over and care for and provide for his family. And Nehemiah made use of a natural tendency in men. Verse 14, "And I looked and arose and said to the nobles, to the leaders, and to the rest of the people, 'Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord great and awesome, and fight for your brethren, for your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses.'" That's a natural thing for men to do. Not that I'm advocating going to war, but isn't that many times why men have gone to war to protect their homes, their families, their country? And that's what was happening here. Nehemiah was incorporating this tendency in men in order to get the job done in the city of Jerusalem. A man needs to feel from his wife that he is her protector. It's something that a man needs. Society says now when a man wants to lead that he's becoming too dominant. Not true. And I'm not talking about controlling. I'm talking about rightly coming to understand and fulfill that responsibility. Men become confused when they're not able to exercise this area of leadership. It causes them difficulties. This is what I was created for, and I can't do it. So, as you think about this, does Christ expect you to follow his lead? Does Christ expect you as wives and ladies to follow his lead? Let's go to John chapter 14. John chapter 14. We'll look at verses 14 and 15. It says in verse 14, "If you ask anything in my name, I will do it." That's what Christ is telling his disciples. It's what he tells all of us. And as we look at these verses, we're looking for something that would correlate to our two responsibilities in the marriage. And the correlation we're looking at is between you following Jesus Christ and you letting your husband lead. He says, "If you ask anything in my name, I will do it." And that's the attitude of a husband, or should be the attitude of a husband. If you ask anything in my name, I will do it. I will do it for you, for us, for the family, for the children. That's what we're expected to do as men. That's our role and responsibility. And then it says in verse 15, if you love me, keep my commandments. So you're thinking, okay, I like that first part where he's doing, making these sacrifices for me. But this second part talks about keeping his commandments. What is the point there? This portion of the passage correlates, as I said, to what husbands are to do. And with Christ, we're talking about commandments. But with regard to a husband, we're talking about guidance. Follow his guidance. Follow his input, his direction. And as husbands, we don't command our wives, but we lead them. We lead them by example. So what happens when a husband makes a decision, said, okay, we're going to do this. This is what would be best to do. And his wife winks at the kids and says, we're not doing that. Yeah, I know your dad said that, but we're not doing that. We're not going to pay any attention to what he says. So, and I've seen this happen. I've seen husbands say, this is what we want to do. And the wife said, we're not doing that. Maybe not to his face, but it's happening behind his back. So what happens when the husband finds out about that? It's just like letting the air out of a balloon. And basically you're undermining him as the leader of the family. We're not going to listen to Dad. Listen to me. And you do that at your own peril, because really you're undermining your own house. Husbands need to know that you respect him and that you are submissive to him. Let's go back to the word respect again. What we read, that the wife is told to see that she respects her husband. But notice it did not say respect your husband when he deserves it. It doesn't say respect your husband when he earns it or when you think you should. I'm not feeling it, man. I'm not doing that. I'm not going to be respectful. It's not like that. That's not how it works. Yet the scriptures don't tell us that. The Greek word for respect that we find there in Ephesians 5 is phobio, and it means fear. And it doesn't mean fear, the cowering type of fear. It means reverential fear. You reverence and you respect your husband. As if I were to say to you as wives, every one of you respect Jesus Christ. There wouldn't be anybody, any of the ladies here that would disagree with that, would you? I believe all of you would be respectful. And you would all recognize that if I don't reverence and respect Jesus Christ, there are going to be consequences to that. Do you think that that's true? There will be consequences to that. So if you think about it in the relation to your husband, if you do not respect him, will there be consequences? And there will be. There will be consequences, unfortunately. Something interesting, if you were to go to a Hallmark store and buy a card, if you as a woman went to the Hallmark store to buy a card for your husband, what kind of card would you buy? What sentiment would be reflected in your card? You would be getting a card that says, I love you. Love would be the sentiment you want to convey, because you're coming at it from a woman's point of view. And due to the fact that most cards sold are sold to women, those are the ideas that are reflected in those cards, is mostly sentiments of love. But, you might think about, if you had the choice of two cards, I love you or I respect you, which one would you buy? I've already kind of given the answer. You would buy the love card. But which one would your husband appreciate more? From your perspective, love's the answer. But from his perspective, I respect you would go a long way in helping your relationship. And see, women think in terms of love. Men think in terms of respect. Another survey talked about in this book, the first survey question to the men was, do you think your wife loves you? And 100% of the men said, I think she does. I know she loves me. But 80% of those same men said they weren't sure that she respected him. 100% were sure she loved him, but 80% of those men, 80 out of 100, weren't sure that she respected him. We talk about having unconditional love for one another, and God has unconditional love for us. He expects certain behavior, and we did not have to demonstrate our unconditional love for him before he sent his son to die for us. The scriptures tell us that God loved us first. We didn't have to earn his love. We don't deserve his love. He just offered it to us. And since we're to be mature as our Father is mature, we are to also have unconditional love. What about unconditional respect? What about unconditional respect? How many mistakes does a husband have to make before a wife can cease respecting him? You reach a certain critical mass, I don't have to respect him anymore. How far do we have to go? Women say they love their husbands but don't respect him for whatever reason it might be, and there are lots of reasons that women come up with. And we're not talking about behaviors that damage your trust. We're not talking about that. Not all marital problems are caused by a sin committed by a husband or wife. The majority of marital problems are because men don't understand women and women don't understand men. Men don't understand how to truly love their wives, and women don't fully understand how to respect their husbands. And ladies, if you show respect to your husband, you will be amazed at how he will respond to it. You may be thinking, no way I'm going on down that road, but I'm advocating, give it a shot. Give it a shot. And you will find that he will respond to it. In a section of the book, the chapter entitled Conflict Makes Most Men Feel Disrespected, the author of the book says, men need to feel respected during conflict more than they need to feel love. Women don't understand this because they are tuned into the love wavelength. And if a man expresses a need for respect, he's considered to be arrogant or vain. How many of you want to tell your wives, you need to respect me? Most of you are probably thinking, if I said that, I'm probably going to be doing time someplace. But anyway. So the author talks about when a couple first meet and begin to date. What's it like? It was intimate admiration for him that won his heart. Intimate admiration for him that won his heart. Everyone does what he does for the admiration of a woman. And he wants their admiration. It was because she respected him and admired him. And she spoke to him in a certain way and demonstrated her respect by how she spoke to him and in her actions toward him. You know, it's like, when you're kind of like a dog. When your dog sees you come in, what does it do? Its tail's wagging. It may be barking. It's spinning around. It's happy to see you. And it wants you to pet them. It wants you to touch them. And it's trying to earn your admiration in a sense. And men are like that. You know, we're all, you know, panting and doing tricks and stuff like that because we want you to think highly of us. Now, that's a crude analogy, but that's in to a degree what we're doing. So, you see, as you look at men, the way they operate, men have an honor code, and there are certain things that they know not to say to a woman. You would never say those things to her. You might say them to another man, but you wouldn't say them to her. And you would also be careful what you said to a man because there's that code there and there are certain lines you don't go beyond. And you know, women will often talk to a man in such a way that a man would never talk to another man. And there's a reason a man wouldn't say those things to another man. Because when such words are uttered by a wife to a husband, what does the man do? He steps back and he withdraws. He steps back and he withdraws. And he feels that it's the honorable thing to do. So most men will stonewall during conflict. You may think, conversations you've had with your husband and he stops talking. Why did that happen? Because he's stepping back. He's stonewalling. What do you want from him? I'm talking to you. You need to talk to me. We need to work this out. And he's saying, can't do it right now because I'm going to say something I shouldn't do or do something I shouldn't do. So I need to just step back. So that's what he does. So he sees that as honorable, not going too far or saying something he will regret or escalating the situation. For the man to do this, the wife feels rejected. Where's the communication? Where's the talking? Is what she's thinking about. And her point of view is we've got to talk. We've got to communicate. And a woman feels this is the chance to show her love, a chance to draw closer. So she keeps talking because she's expressing love to the husband. And the husband's thinking, he doesn't see it that way. Okay? But from her perspective, she's being loving toward her husband, and he's thinking, this is not good. So the best thing for me to do is back off here a bit and not say anything. So for the man, he's, as I said, he's drawing back. He can't deal with it. He needs to escape. He needs air. He needs to think. He needs to settle down. And for men in these situations, their blood pressure rises. But for the women, their blood pressure in this circumstance doesn't go up. He begins to become angry, and he's moving towards saying something he shouldn't say. So, something he will regret. And the wife sees this not as understanding this. She doesn't understand why he's doing what he's doing, so she sees this as his rejecting her. And he doesn't want to talk to me. He doesn't want to work it out. And the author of the book calls this, his term for it is the crazy cycle. And if you've been married for a while, you'll go through this cycle periodically. And there's a reason you go through it periodically, and that's because you're coming at things from male and female perspectives. And you don't understand each other's perspectives. And I'm not saying I understand all this perfectly either. So the man says, I'm backing off because I don't want to do something that I will regret or say something I'll regret. And the woman is saying, you're rejecting me. So the author talks about how you can get out of this cycle. So what can a woman do to change the cycle? How can you get out of that? Well, there's a way that you can get out of this cycle in conflict. And so let's look at another correlation that relates one's approach in marriage. Let's go to 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 21. And it's interesting where this section of Scripture begins. It begins with Jesus Christ. And it says, for to this you were called. And the standard here, we were all called to, but there's an application both in a male sense and a female sense. For to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps. Think about that in what we said in Ephesians 5. You should follow his steps. Now Christ, he who committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth, who when he was reviled did not revile in return. That may be some important information for us to keep in mind. You know, when he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges rightly. So to whom did he commit himself? To God. That is the example. And he goes on to say, he said, to him who judges righteously, who himself bore our sins in his own body on the tree, that we, having died to sins, might live for righteousness, by whose stripes you were healed. For you were like sheep going astray, but have now returned to the shepherd and overseer of your souls. I'd like you to notice something that's interesting here. This is the end of the chapter, based upon how the chapters have been divided, but when it was written, there were no chapter breaks. So the chapter continues on in chapter 3. And where does Peter go? In chapter 3, verse 1. He begins to speak to the wives. Wives, likewise. What is he pointing the wife back to here? He's pointing the wife to what has come before in regard to Jesus Christ. This is your model. And he said, wives, likewise, as was Jesus Christ, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they, without a word, may be won by the conduct of their wives. When they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear, that is the proper type of fear and respect, your approach can impact your husband is what the Apostle Peter is telling you. And as you think about marriages, in some marriages, there are ladies who have very strong personalities and are very effective debaters. Very effective in argument. And I know this may come as a shock. Men are intimidated by that. So usually, they just give up. They cave in. One man told his son, whatever your mom wants, let her do it. And the son had observed what was going on in their marriage, which was troubled. And the son, over a period of time, saw his dad give up. He quit. He got tired of fighting the battle. That's not the answer. That's not the outcome you want. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 3 says, do not let your adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair, wearing gold, or putting on fine apparel. Rather, let it be the hidden person of the heart. So what counts? What counts in the marriage relationship is your heart. What's going on inside of you? Because what goes on inside of you is going to come out of your mouth, and it's going to come out in your actions. And in your attitude. So he said, what really counts is the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. For in this manner, in former times, the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are, if you do good and are not afraid with any terror. A gentle and humble spirit is special to God. And I'd like you ladies to notice that you can win your husband to God and improve your relationship with God. So you win on two fronts. By the approach that you take, you win over your husband and you improve your relationship with God. And as I say this, I'm not advocating that as a woman you never make input. You should. And we as husbands should listen to your input. My wife has many good ideas and good input. And what I'm talking about here is how you go about that, how you communicate with your husband. It's both what you say and how you say it. For many of us as men, how do we interpret her input? Now, she's showing us love, and how do we see it? We see it as criticism, attack, no confidence in us, being disrespectful. I don't think most women intend that to be the case, but that's how men interpret it. So you got to think about now, I want to follow what Peter said here, so how do I do this? Do a better job of this? Because it is obviously doable. Again, from the book, it says, a man's love language is respect. A common thread with men is that they cannot articulate that they need respect. And most men feel they don't deserve respect. And he might hear his wife tell him, you don't deserve respect. And if you really want to tear him down, tell him, I have no respect for you. Trust me. It's the greatest blow you can inflict. So, I would say never do that. But that is the blow that can really hurt. I have another question. Are love and respect the same? Are love and respect the same? Look at the question this way. If you've ever worked outside of the house and you had a boss, in all probability you had a boss and you respected him. Is that right? And you should respect him. However, did you love him in the same way you did your husband? I hope not. So you respect him, but I love my husband, and we're looking at two different things. Love and respect are not the same. You can respect your boss, but you love your husband. And husbands need to know that you love them. And they also need to know more than anything else that you respect them. From the woman told a counselor that I love him, but I don't respect him because of what he is doing. So obviously he's doing something that she doesn't like and so can't respect him. And so the counselor turned it around and asked her a question. Let's think about it this way. What if your husband said to you, I really respect you, but I don't love you? That would be a cruel blow. And the woman said, that would be devastating if he said that to me. So, ladies, how does that resonate with you? Your husband says, I respect you, but I don't love you. You want him to love you, and you want him, yes, to respect you. He should. It can take a man a long time to get over being told that he's not respected by his wife. It takes a long time to get over with that. And there are things that a man can do to his wife that cause her to difficulties that she has to work through as well. So here's the point. Women, the woman needs unconditional love, and the man needs unconditional respect. There's something else that your husband needs. And I want to mention a few of these things that are all linked to respect. In Genesis chapter 2, verse 18, it talks about God creating Eve. God created Eve. And he created Eve as an ally comparable to him. That's why God created you, to be an ally comparable to your husband. And your husband, in the relationship, needs you to stand shoulder to shoulder with him as his ally. Someone that completes his needs. And believe it or not, when your husband knows you've got his back, he knows that you're there standing with him as an ally, it energizes him. And you may be thinking, how can doing, and think back to the story of the man and the football game. All right. To him, he just wants her to sit close to him. It's like standing shoulder to shoulder with him. For him, she loves me and she's willing to do this. I'm not worried about talking. Maybe he should be, but he's not worried about talking. And she says, you know what? I can do that. It seems like nonsense to me because why am I going to sit there? I'm not interested in this game, but I love you. And I'll sit there with you. Like Tammy Wynette said, sometimes you do things because you're a woman. And I'm not advocating that all the time. It just comes to my mind. There are things you don't understand. So you may think this is a waste of time. but maybe it's not such a waste of time. So I'll look forward to the reports of the guys asking you to sit with them and watch the football game tomorrow. But anyway, hopefully I don't get any of those reports. That may be taking advantage of this. So anyway, I'd like to just refer to the Song of Solomon. We don't often refer to this, but this scripture is interesting in relation to what we're talking about of standing shoulder to shoulder with your husband. And in the Song of Solomon, chapter 5, verse 16, it says, "His mouth is most sweet. Yes, he is altogether lovely. This is my beloved, and this is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem." This is my beloved, and this is my friend. You know, what husband would not like to know that that's how you feel toward him? That they need to know that you are their best friend and ally. So, I know, in my life, I know my wife's my friend. We go deeper into that, but I'm not going to. She's my friend. We watch the World Series together. We jump around in the living room together. We do different things that we can do together. She's my friend and ally. And as my friend and ally, my wife always tries to give me good input. Sometimes I don't like that input, but it is always based upon being an ally and seeking to compliment me in the sense of our working together. Another relationship builder, I know there are times when you just want your husband to listen. You just want your husband to listen. And there are times, guys, when your wife's talking, don't say a thing. Just listen. Yesterday, my wife came home and was talking to me. And so I had thought about this. So I thought, I think this is one of those times where I'm just going to listen. So I just listened and she told me all about it. And okay, all right. So I don't want to get into this. I hear what you're saying. So sometimes that's the case. But there are other times, what is the man's tendency? When you start telling him stuff, well, this is bugging me and this is going on, what does he want to do? He doesn't want to listen. He's going to tell you how to fix it, isn't he? Well, yeah, I'd do this. I'd do A, B, C, and D. He'd have an engineering graph all plotted out for you and have the whole thing worked out. Isn't that how it goes? But the thing is, there are times when you don't want him talking, but sometimes let him talk. Let him talk. Let him give you his input. And he's expressing the love he has for you. He wants to get it right. He wants to make things right for you. And sometimes you may know consult with him. Ask him about things. And hopefully, as men, when you have the opportunity, you make the most of it. Don't botch it. So anyway, make the most of it. Let me give you a short story about communicating. A couple had been married for 50 years. And in celebration of the 50 years of marriage, their children gave them this very nice anniversary party. They had a wonderful time. And the party's over and they go home. So the next morning they're sitting at the breakfast table eating. And he's reading from the newspaper, as he usually does. And she's reading from her favorite magazine. And suddenly she looks up and says, "I want a divorce." 50 years. And the husband is startled and said, "What did I do now?" And she said, "For 50 years you have been giving me the heel out of the loaf of bread. Give me the heel out of the loaf of bread. Obviously, you don't love me." So what did he tell her? He said, "Sweetheart, I gave you the heel because I felt it is the best piece of bread in the loaf. Therefore, I wanted you to have the best." So for 50 years, she's thinking, he doesn't love me. He's giving me the heel of the loaf of bread. So after 50 years, she does understand why he does that. And that's sad. You've been going on for all this time, but you've never figured these things out. And that's where it's really important to learn how to communicate with your husband or your wife, even when it seems difficult. Even in times when, you know, as you try to communicate with him, even when he might immediately put up a wall of defense, try to communicate with him. It's very easy for a woman to say, I have it figured out and I don't need his advice. After all, what can this man say to the woman who always has the right answers? So this woman that had been married for 50 years had her own questions. She said, why are you so quiet? Why are you so quiet? And he said, because if I say something, I always get myself in trouble. So it's better to say nothing at all. There's nothing that I can say that seems to help. And if you see, I would say that if you see your husband withdrawing, you're talking to him and he stops talking, you've got to say, this isn't going right. And maybe take a breather and say, okay, let's come back to this and maybe vary your approach. Say, maybe what would show respect for him? And if you say, you know, I have no respect for him, maybe you need to step back and think about what do I respect about him? Start thinking about it and maybe ask God to help you see it. So allow your husband to help analyze and counsel you through the issues and problems. Don't shut him out. And don't make him go quiet. So some godly admonition for ladies of the church to consider is in Titus chapter 2, verse 3. Titus chapter 2, verse 3, and I'll just, for time's sake, just read this. You can read it later, verses 3 through 5. It says, the older women, likewise, that they be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things. That they admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. So notice the correlation between your behavior towards your husband and the family, the demonstration of living according to God's instructions and teachings. So let me quickly recap. The first thing is, the virtue of love is not enough. A man needs more. He needs your respect. Secondly, be subject to your husbands in everything. Be subject to your husbands in everything. Obviously, don't follow him into sin. We're not advocating that, but follow his lead. He may make mistakes, but seek to the best of your ability to follow him and stand shoulder to shoulder with him. Three, respect your husband as you do Jesus Christ. He's the model. Look at the way he did things. That's the way you are to do things. The fourth point is for you to have to win your husband to you. You have the ability to win your husband to you and to God. You have that ability to win your husband to you and to God. And if he gets off track or he's not acting as he should, or if you're married to an unbeliever, your conduct can have a powerful impact upon him as well. The fifth point, stand shoulder to shoulder with him as his best friend and ally. And six, let your husband counsel and help you. He wants to do that. And this all that I've said here is not meant to devalue or minimize your strengths or talents or abilities as a woman. In God's eyes, all of us, as men and women, were created with the same potential, spiritually. Physically and emotionally, we are different, but we have the same potential. So this message is given in the spirit of helping you understand your husband or understand men more fully. And think about this. If you have boys in your family, think about this. As a wife, how do you want your daughter-in-law to treat your boys? Your example is going to make all the difference. So understanding what R-E-S-P-E-C-T, find out what it means to me, and then you'll be able to greatly enhance your marriage. So we hopefully this help gives you some insights as a wife in the marriage or a young lady. And next time, we'll talk about this. We'll talk to the men. Men, how well do you understand a woman's needs? Do you understand what it means to really love your wife? We'll talk about that the next time I speak. So I know that I'll be talking to me too. So we can all grow in these different things in our lives, and by that we'll have better marriages, and we'll be able to enjoy life in all of its abundance.